As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Go, man. Hear it, I'll do it.
You're listening to Here's the Catch with David Lombardi, Matt Barrows, and Dennis Brown on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Well, it's a 49ers-Seahawks live room, 49ers-Seahawks podcast. It's been a while since we got to do one of these. We got used to doing them last year, Matt. 49ers and the Seahawks played three times, week two, then later in the season up in Seattle, Thursday night, just like this year when the 49ers clinched the division, and then back at Levi's for the wild card playoffs. I think by score, the closest game was the one in Seattle. But I think, in effect, the playoff game actually might have been a little bit closer. The game in Seattle last year, the 49ers were routing them. And I think it would have looked a lot worse had Nick Bosa not fallen on top of Geno Smith on the Diamondo Lenore pick six. So it ended up only being, a seven-point game or something. But it was that playoff game last year where, remember, Seattle was down only a few points and they were driving, and I think it was Charles Omenihu who forced the fumble, and then the 49ers ran away with it in the fourth quarter. But either way, 49ers were much better than Seattle last year. I'm just talking about little nuances of where the Seahawks might have found a crack to try to catch the 49ers. And I think that the goal for San Francisco this season is to maintain that edge over Seattle.
Yeah, big things happened in those games last year. Of course, Trey Lance breaks his ankle in the first Seattle meeting, and the 49ers seemed to be in control in that game, and then were certainly so after Jimmy Garoppolo came in. And then in the second one, that was the Brock Purdy rib game, where he didn't know if he was going to play. And we're talking literally minutes before kickoff. They were debating whether to go with Josh Johnson, who had just come in. But I think modern medicine, let's just say, kicked in right at the right time for Brock Purdy, and he felt a lot better. And he actually looked really good in that game. And I think that this game is going to be similar to that one. Obviously, the location is similar. You know, one of the other similarities is that there's a hurt quarterback, David. I was watching the Rams-Seahawks game last night, and the Seahawks were pretty much in control of that game late in the contest when Geno Smith got hurt, and he was replaced, and that sort of allowed the Rams to come back. I think Geno Smith is going to play in this game. He was limited on Tuesday in that sort of scant Tuesday practice that these teams have. But another scenario where one of these quarterbacks is having to play on a short week with an injury, how do you see that being a factor this on Thursday?
Well, Seattle couldn't block the 49ers last year. The 49ers had 61 pressures over the three matchups, and I don't see that changing this season. Seahawks have changed a little bit about their front. Charles Cross, the rookie tackle, last year it has matured a year. I think he's better, so he'll probably be able to give Nick Bosa and Chase Young a better fight, but they're a little desperate on the other side to the point where they brought in a 41-year-old, Jason Peters, and I don't think it's going to go well for an offensive line that's had to do that against Nick Bosa, Chase Young. Eric Armstead coming off his best career pass rushing game with 13 pressures against Tampa Bay. And obviously Javon Hargrave has been added to the mix. So there's no indication that Seattle will be able to handle the 49ers pass rush better than they did last year. And, you know, when you ask me about Geno Smith and how it's going to go for him, I think that's the operative term, right? Last year, he wasn't really able to ever get a rhythm against the 49ers because Seattle couldn't win up front. And I think this season, Seattle brings a very similar offensive arsenal. They've added a rookie wideout, but still, it's the DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett show. And the 49ers did really, really well in covering the Seahawks. And, you know, over the past two seasons, Geno Smith has started out hot, and then he's trailed off as the season has gone along. And even during his hot stretch last year, the 49ers shut him down in week two. So it just seems to be a really, really good matchup for the 49ers on that side of the ball.
Yeah, I can't imagine having an injury is going to kind of help that situation. What about the other side of the line? We got a question right off the bat from No E.T. Do we have the likelihood of Banks starting and Feliciano replacing Burford? All sorts of movement along the 49ers offensive line. How do you see that shaking out when the 49ers first take the field at Lumen Field?
Well, that's really interesting to me. I know Banks was back out of practice. He's coming off the turf toe. He was listed as limited, but that was just, you know, a procedural thing because they didn't actually practice. It was more of a walkthrough. So it's really, really hard to know if he's going to be ready or not. And I think the 49ers really wish this game were on a Sunday because I think Banks would be a much greater certainty to play. And Spencer Burford, who's a fresh addition to the injury report, would be a much greater certainty to play. But Burford hadn't practiced at all this week. So there is a chance that the 49ers are missing both of their starting guards. And this is one area where Seattle is different. They have 9 of 11 new starters since the last time they played the 49ers defensively. And they have retooled the defensive line, especially the interior. They're running a 3-4. They have Leonard Williams. They traded for Leonard Williams. So he's going to rush a lot against guards in this game. They brought back Jaron Reed, who used to be a fixture for this team on the interior. He was gone for 2 years. They have Draymond Jones now, and they have Mario Edwards Jr. So that's the four players who can, you know, vets who could really give a beleaguered offensive line trouble. And, you know, let's just go big picture, Matt. The 49ers offensive line, even with everybody healthy, hasn't been good in pass protection this year. That's been probably the most remarkable thing about Brock Purdy's performance to me, is that this line ranks in the 20s in pass protection, and they've given up a lot of pressure against good interior rushers. Last week, Vita Vea had his way there on the inside. I don't think the Seahawks have a Vita Vea, but they have enough veteran talent there to give the 49ers some trouble, especially if they have some injury absences at guard.
Okay, so let's just assume that it's Banks back on the left side and it's Feliciano, who has been playing well as Banks' replacement, on the right side, and he's played on the right side in the past, so it shouldn't be that big a deal for him. You know, the 49ers always keep one guy in reserve, especially at center. Who's that guy in this game? Is it the undrafted rookie, Corey Luciano, because he does play center? He was up for the Tampa Bay game, but they do have some options there as far as that reserve interior lineman.
Yeah, they do. And I think Luciano is a natural fit to activate in a game like this, because in case you have an injury at center and Feliciano's already occupied by being a backup at one of the guard spots, at least you have an emergency for the center position and you don't have to send Feliciano to center to put out that fire and then be completely exposed at guard. But Trent Williams, when I asked him yesterday, it was interesting to me that the first name that came out of his mouth for the guard position as far as an emergency was Jalen Moore, who's actually never played guard. Maybe he did in high school, but I doubt it. I think that he's been a tackle his whole career, going back to college. Matt Pryor, though, has some guard experience. Like he's started several games in his career, back with the Colts and I believe the Eagles before that. So The 49ers do have a veteran and Pryor who's played some guard, and they think that Jalen Moore, who, like, I guess ironically, they were planning to move him to guard when they drafted him, but then they just have decided to keep him at tackle. So maybe that's finally necessitated now if there are some injuries on the interior.
Well, they do like to have a guy who can play center. Remember the 49ers center disaster. What was it, 2020 when they burned through?
That was at Seattle, too. That was at Seattle.
Yeah, right. So, I don't know. To me, it seems like Luciano, who's a local guy, could get tapped again just for that emergency type of situation. But that'll be something to definitely keep an eye on up there. You know, moving forward, you know, it seems like Shanahan has hinted at this, that, boy, Feliciano looks so good in practice. We got to get Feliciano on the field somehow. And it seems like the way that they would do that, at the very least, would be to begin platooning him at right guard with Burford, the way that they did with Daniel Brunskill last year. I mean, do you think that if Feliciano does play right guard and has a good game, this could be all we've seen from Spencer Burford this year, and that he might lose his starting job in that game in Philadelphia coming up?
Well, he's been the worst 49ers offensive lineman so far this year. But I also think that they really believe in him as far as his explosiveness at the second level on some of those reach blocks. They do need better pass protection, though. And, you know, but maybe they don't need better pass protection. Maybe I misspoke on that, because Brock Purdy has been so explosive in the pocket. I mean, he's been able to manipulate the pocket and with real bursts, right? We saw it on the throw to Deebo Samuel last week after some pressure hit the 49ers. So it's a question of it's like a cost benefit, right? You feel that Spencer Burford can do some things in the run game that are really important for your scheme and how you try to attack. But at the same time, you also have to look at what you're allowing in the pass game. And I think that it is important the 49ers continue to develop more consistency there. I think that's where the idea of the platoon comes from, is that you're trying to get a baseline of stability on at least some of these possessions, but also allow Burford to continue to deliver his upside and his development on the other ones. They did it successfully last year with Daniel Brunskill in there with Spencer Burford.
Kelly S. asked a question. I'm sorry, Kelly, I don't know your gender. Didn't they just sign a guard, Ben Bartsch? They did just sign a guard, Ben Bartsch, and he kind of flew in and was on hand for that evening walkthrough last night. My sense is that, boy, it's just too quick a turnaround for him to be able to play in this game. But they did sign him. So what do you think, David? Do you think that there's a chance that Ben Bartsch is active for this game and could get tapped on an emergency basis?
I don't think so. Kyle Shanahan seemed very, very skeptical of that. They didn't practice at all full speed this week. So Ben Bartsch, though, he's really interesting. He's a former receiver in high school, tight end in college at the start of his career. Came up with some really disgusting protein shake concoction that included a tub of cottage cheese in every shake to gain like 70 pounds over one off season. That went viral a couple years ago. And when he was drafted, and he actually developed into a good pass protector for Jacksonville last year, but then he dislocated his knee. And then he got benched this year coming off of that injury. So the 49ers, I mean, this is a bit of a flyer. I think that the 49ers obviously think that Ben Bartsch still has more in his recovery to go. Like, as far as, I think he's healthy, but I think he's still coming back from the injury as far as effectiveness. So, you know, I think that he might be somebody who can fill in down the stretch, who might raise the ceiling if he continues to progress in that recovery. But I don't think he's a instant plug and play kind of guy.
Yeah, there's a bit of musical chairs going on among three teams here. The Jacksonville Jaguars traded for Ezra Cleveland, who was a guard with the Vikings. And I was told that the 49ers also were interested. I don't know the level of interest in Ezra Cleveland, but when he went to Jacksonville, obviously that was off the table. But by going to Jacksonville, it sort of paved the way for Bartsch to be placed on the Jaguars practice squad, which enabled the 49ers to sign him off the practice squad. So I gather through all that, and I know this is true of the Vikings, that they play a style of offensive line that's similar to the 49ers, a lot of zone blocking. In fact, I think their offensive line coach is a former pupil of Chris Foerster's. I'm not sure the situation in Jacksonville, but it seems like it's similar as well. So my thought is that the learning curve for Ben Bartsch isn't going to be too steep, because I think there's probably some similarities between what the two teams do. Let's go back to another question here. Okay, we got one from regular listener Malik H. in Oakland. Any word on Verrett to the practice squad? Yeah, I mean, that was something that Kyle Shanahan said he hoped to happen, would happen early this week. It didn't happen. He still hopes it would happen. I don't think other teams are beating down the door to sign Jason Verrett to their practice squads or to their active rosters. So maybe this is something that occurs during that long week that we're going to have now before the Eagles game. But obviously the interest is still there, but it's still not happening. And David, Jason Verrett appeals to the 49ers in a lot of ways, not just his ability to play cornerback, but just what he sort of gives the younger guys in the locker room. It seemed to be a kind of a big factor for the 49ers.
Yeah, I think even the veterans. Kyle Shanahan said when they first worked him out a couple months ago before he signed with the Texans that seven players watched his workout, in which Kyle Shanahan said it, he had never seen happen before in his time coaching. So, I mean, Verrett's gone through two Achilles tears, two ACL tears, and a lot of other injuries. To be able to even be considered for an NFL roster after going through all that shows the talent level, shows the determination, the character, the attitude. That's all stuff that you want in your locker room. And they have an empty practice squad spot right now. So I would suspect, Matt, that Verrett might be holding out in case there is an opportunity for him to sign to an active roster or to sign to the 49ers active roster, because he had tremendously more leverage if he was able to do that, and more money. And with more money comes more leverage. But the minimum salary for the entire season, so it's going to be prorated, is over $1 million for the active roster, and it's only about $250,000 for the practice squad. So it makes sense for Jason Verrett, especially if he performed well in Houston, which I think he did on the practice squad. It's totally possible he asked for his release there because he wanted a shot at a Super Bowl with the 49ers this year. And obviously he commands a lot of respect and from that coaching staff as well, because they were with the 49ers. So it's very possible that Verrett wants to be with the 49ers and that this was kind of his plan, but he also wants to do what's best for him and his family. So right now the 49ers clearly want him, and we'll see when that finally gets done.
That leads us to this question from Madison P. What's the biggest need still affecting the 49ers? I think you're seeing the 49ers addressing the need or needs. I mean, look where they're making all these moves. They're either at offensive line or at cornerback. And at cornerback, I think one of the guys to really look at is Darrell Luter Jr., the rookie. Remember, they had those three guys had their practice windows opened a few weeks ago. Luter Jr., Samuel Womack, and Robert Beal. And Luter is the only one who opened all the way, that they activated him. And he actually played, I think it was 11 snaps on special teams. And this is the guy that missed the end of OTAs, missed all of training camp. No preseason, no nothing. And all of a sudden, they're giving him a shot here in the middle of the season. And it's rare for a rookie to get that, and especially a rookie who didn't practice much in the spring and summer. So basically that just tells me that they have a lot of belief in him. If there's an injury or two, he's going to be playing cornerback for the San Francisco 49ers during a very crucial stretch of the season. And we saw that a few years ago with Ambry Thomas getting a lot of big snaps in the playoffs. That big Week 18 game against the Rams, for example. Luter is in a position where they might have to ask him to do the same. So I think that if you're looking at the future of that position, the 49ers suspect, at least, that they've got a potential starter in Darrell Luter. All we have to do, David, is to see him in action. That's the only thing that's missing at this point. But, he's a guy to look for. Number 28, he'll be out there on special teams on Thursday.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating. And just really minimal preparation time is the only issue here. He's had a couple weeks of practice. He didn't have training camp. And he is a rookie, and he is coming from, South Alabama, so it's not like he was playing in the SEC. They might have played a couple games against the SEC, but he's very talented. He's strong. They like how tenacious his college tape was. So we'll watch Darrell Luter Jr. with a lot of interest, but I think that it's one of those things where everything's kind of a wild card at this point. And for Luter, he might have impressed in practice, and I'm sure that the 49ers have noted that. But you don't know until the lights come on, right? It's always that with any player, even a first-round pick. And everything right now is a high-pressure situation. And that's what made Jair Brown's insertion into the lineup last week all the more impressive to me. Because Jair Brown – I mean, he's a rookie. He had to come in a pinch. Obviously, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers picked on him right away. He gave up a 41-yard reception, but then he had three pass breakups in the end zone, including an interception. I mean, those were big plays, and when one of them sealed the game. So it was huge from Jair Brown last week, and the 49ers are going to need him as a rookie, and they already have a good, I think, indication that he's going to be able to come through for them. After Talanoa Hufanga tore his ACL, Matt.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
We got a bunch of questions about him. Stephanie S. asked, do you see Brown having the same role as Hufanga in this defense? I saw some snaps where they had him single high, others in the box. Seems like they use him as a chess piece. On the surface of it, I think he's very similar to Hufanga. I think he's really probably most comfortable around the line of scrimmage. I mean, he's a bigger bodied guy. He's rough and tumble. He's got tons of energy. I think the question mark for him is in those single high situations, which was the same for Hufanga, and he ended up acquitting himself very well in them. When they used that pick on him, I think it was 87 overall, their highest pick in this last draft, I thought that the plan going forward would be, okay, one more season of Tashawn Gibson Sr. He's getting up there in years. Brown will eventually replace him. And here he is having to kind of take over for the other guy at midseason. Now, they are interchangeable a lot. I do think that Gibson ends up playing the quote-unquote free safety role a lot more than Hufanga does. It just makes sense. But I do think that they can play both. And that'll be the question, really, for Brown. You don't see a lot of big plays being made against the 49ers. And it's probably underappreciated the work that the safeties have done this year. But when you don't see a lot of explosives, it usually means that the safeties are in the right spot. They're discouraging those explosive plays and basically are doing their job. But David, how do you see Brown vis-a-vis the role that Hufanga was playing to this point?
Well, I think that when you look at Jair Brown, his instincts are what jump off the tape, which I get it. It's a lot of what we said about Talanoa Hufanga. He had 10 interceptions over his past two seasons at Penn State. That made Jair Brown the only player that was draft eligible this past year to have double-digit picks in college football. I talked to his college safeties coach after the 49ers drafted him, Anthony Poindexter. And his first thing was he's got an uncanny way of getting picks. He just knows where to be. And that's honestly, Matt, that's the top instinct that you want as an NFL defensive back. The 4-3-40 doesn't matter that much, right? If you don't have any instincts, the 4-3-40 is not going to get you anywhere. If you have 4-5 speed, even 4-6 speed, but you have great instincts, you're going to be better than a 4-2, 4-3 guy. Who doesn't know what he's doing out on the field. So I think it was the 40 time, which was a 4.5 or a 4.6, that dropped Jair Brown down to lower in the third round where the 49ers were able to get him. But if he had run just a little bit faster at the combine, he probably would have been considered the best safety prospect in this draft, just based on the numbers and the intangibles. And, I just talked about those interceptions. The 49ers say that, and Penn State says the same thing, that Jair Brown was measured at 21 miles an hour with the GPS chips playing for Penn State, which is just yet another example of 40 combine time not really being all that tied to football speed. You have to look deeper into these things, and the GPS tracking has given us a new look into football speed, right? And I think that Jair Brown has it. But also, Penn State used him at a ton of different spots. They played him close to the line of scrimmage. They played him further back. For a while, we thought the 49ers might go with some three safety sets this year. Maybe that was in the mix. Remember that Talanoa Hufanga, when he came along in 2021, they did run those three safety sets. But it wasn't until about this time of the year. It wasn't until later in the season when Hufanga started playing more. So maybe that was going to happen. Now everything is expedited, though. Now Jair Brown has to play as a standard one or two safety guy. Hufanga's out. And I do think that the 49ers' ultimate plan for the future is to pair Hufanga with Brown because Tashaun Gibson is 33 years old, playing really well. But that can't last forever, right?
No, not at all. But that'll be interesting going forward how they're going to approach that position because you can't. I mean, they think that Talanoa Hufanga is going to be healthy to begin the season. It was a clean tear, no meniscus damage involved, more along the 6 to 8 month mark for recovery. But it's an ACL. You can't rely on that. So you have to have some fallback plans in place. And that brings up a question from Will L., who talks about Brown. He says, are the 49ers looking at any other safeties as backups? And, that takes you back to some of these roster raids that other teams have done. Remember, Quantrez Knight was on this team, throughout the offseason, looked good in the preseason, looked very good as a safety in the preseason. And then the Cardinals saw that and ended up signing him off of the practice squad. So he's not an option. He certainly would have been, I think, if he had still been here. Another guy who came in at the same time as him as a rookie a couple of seasons ago is Taylor Hawkins. he's still on the practice squad. He'd be a possibility. But really, at this time of the year, it's pretty slim pickings. I'm sure there are some veteran safeties kind of floating around on the street. But for now, at least, the 49ers seem to be content with what they have. Of course, you've got George Odom, who was the third safety until this last week, when sort of Jair Brown surpassed him for that role. But I wonder whether that's something the 49ers will look more deeply at after this game, when they have a little bit of some breathing room before that that Eagles contest.
Yeah, and you don't know what each week is going to bring, right? We had no idea that Talanoa Hufanga was going to tear his ACL heading into the Tampa Bay game. So you don't know if there are going to be more injuries at that position. You don't know if injuries are going to be able to hit elsewhere. It is a living, breathing thing, the NFL roster situation, that you just have to read and react as the season goes along. Everybody tries to chart this out weeks ahead of time, and your plan blows up as soon as you get punched in the face. So the 49ers are just trying to make it through a marathon. I think right now they've stabilized the ship, right? They were 5-3 after that losing streak heading into the bye week, and now they're 7-3. And now they have a game lead over Seattle. And, you know, big picture here, Matt, 49ers have a plus 120 point differential. Seattle's negative 2, and they're only a game behind at 6-4. So the 49ers have clearly outperformed Seattle this year, but the Seahawks have found some close, gritty wins, and the Seahawks have, you know, put their name into this division mix. This is an opportunity for the 49ers to grab a commanding two-game lead. I think it's important that they do so, because they're heading to Philly right after that, and then Seattle comes back to Levi Stadium. So this next three-game stretch for the 49ers is really a way to transition from trying to gain control over the division to really inserting themselves into the mix for the number one seed. And I guess I should say reinserting themselves for the mix into the number one seed, because they fell out of it a little bit after that three-game losing streak. I really see this as a potentially defining three-game stretch, Matt.
Yeah, and then you're looking at, obviously, the Chiefs would have done the 49ers a huge favor if they'd been able to pull out that win on Monday night. Boy, I've never seen a bigger discrepancy between two teams' wide receiver crew as the Eagles versus the Chiefs. The Chiefs' receivers were terrible in that game, just awful. But, you know, the silver lining is that it doesn't get much easier for the Eagles. They play the Bills, and then, of course, the 49ers, and then the Cowboys, and then the Seahawks in Seattle. So I think that the door is still open for the 49ers to try to get that number one seed. Obviously, beating the Eagles would go a long way toward that, but the dream is not dead to have that number one seed going into the playoffs. But yeah, this next stretch of games for a lot of teams is going to be really, really juicy. And what last questions, or last series of questions about the Seahawks? We talked about their offense being relatively similar to what it was last year. They added a couple of pieces, and one of them, Zach Charbonnet, could be the starting tailback tomorrow night. The defense, though, has been reshuffled. They've got a lot of really interesting pieces there. And at least in Seattle, they think that they are set up better to attack the 49ers offense, to beat the 49ers, than they were last year. What do you see from them, David, that defense, particularly the defensive line, which is different than it was last year? Leonard Williams is part of that unit. Leonard Williams will end up playing the 49ers probably three times this year, because he was with the Giants when they came through Levi Stadium earlier in the year. And he's part of that mix. Some other new faces along that defensive line as well.
Yeah, I mean, Seattle's generating a lot more pressure than they did last year. However, they have lost some edge rushing talent. Uchenna Nwosu, done for the year. He was their sack leader last season. So they've tried to make up for it by bringing in some retreads like Frank Clark. And Frank Clark is nowhere near the player that he used to be. He's depth for Seattle now on the outside. I like Boye Mafe, who's a younger edge rusher. So we'll see who gets to work against right tackle and Colton McKivitz, because that player obviously is going to have an easier time than whoever goes up against Trent Williams on the left side. I really like the Seattle interior, though, compared to what they were last year. They've brought Jaron Reed back, who is the type of player who's given the 49ers interior lineman trouble. He's 300-plus pounds. The 49ers are lighter than they are strong on the interior, especially if they don't have Aaron Banks. But Jake Brendel is a great example of that. Brendel's gotten pushed around a little bit by these really big nose tackle types, and Jaron Reed can deliver that type of impact. Again, he's not a Vita Vea, who was 347 pounds, but Vita Vea is a singular player. There is nobody else like Vita Vea in the National Football League. Jaron Reed gives that Seattle defense its spine again. You know, it gives that interior presence that I think they were missing for a couple of years. And then Leonard Williams is the type of player who can line up anywhere along the defensive line. And I guarantee you he's going to see a ton of work against the 49ers guards. And that guard situation is what we were talking about at the top of the show. It's sketchy right now. I mean, if both of your starters are on the injury report, it could get really shady in this game. Plus Mario Edwards Jr., Draymond Jones, who's a really versatile player. Draymond Jones can line up outside, inside, do whatever he needed to. I think the Seahawks can run a lot of trouble for the 49ers on the inside, and that puts a ton of pressure on Brock Purdy. And every single time I talk about the 49ers offensive line, it comes back to Purdy, because he's an absolute outlier in the league. He's the only quarterback that's delivering truly exceptional efficiency behind a below average O-line. And you can't emphasize that enough, Matt. You know, one of the narratives about Brock Purdy that's incorrect is, oh, this guy's everything set up for him. He doesn't. He's playing behind a line that's really struggled. And I think on national TV on Thursday night, I think it might be especially apparent if the 49ers have some injuries there at guard. So I think there's a lot of pressure on Purdy to continue doing what he's doing. And that is show calmness, show escapability, and show that poise that you need to show whenever the protection in front of you is not great.
Well, he certainly showed it in Seattle last year under more difficult circumstances, or at least more individual difficult circumstances that he's going to face tomorrow night. So poise is what this guy has. I mean, this is one of his superpowers. You look at, okay, how is this guy elite? Well, I think it's safe to say that his poise and his processing are elite at this point, and that's what's served him so well. You made a point about Mafe. Boy, Mafe, he's got 7 sacks. Really has been their sack guy up in Seattle. I know that the 49ers were very interested in him and the 2022 draft. He ends up going early in the second round to Seattle, and the 49ers were left with Drake Jackson later in the second round at the same position. Obviously, the Seahawks getting a little bit more out of Mafe early on than the 49ers are getting out of Drake Jackson. Let's talk about our predictions, David. How do you see this one shaping up in Seattle on Thanksgiving night?
Well, about the same as you. I saw your prediction when we were working on the piece. I think you said, well, I'm not going to spoil it because you get to say your own prediction, but I'm going to say 20.
People
salivating, ready for it.
Right.
Chomping at the bit. Yeah, I'm going to say 27-17. That 27-point mark seems about right. I actually predicted that last week, and that's where the 49ers ended up. I feel 30 is just tough to get to, because once you're up in the higher 20s when the 49ers defense is playing well, you tend to shut it down a little bit offensively, and that's exactly what happened last week. So 27 seems right. It's going to be dry in Seattle, which is important. Like last year, it's going to be dry and it's going to be relatively cold. It's going to get down into the 30s because this is a night game. So I think that that's not going to impede the 49ers offense. It's going to allow them to put up their high 20s output. Maybe if something else goes right for them, they'll get into the low 30s, which is obviously excellent in NFL. And, you know, I might be a little generous towards Seattle, giving them 17 points in this game. They only managed 16 against the Rams. So, but they're at home, and you would think that the Thursday night fatigue in this game typically hurts defenses a little bit. That's why I said 17 for Seattle. So 27-17 49ers.
Yeah, they were able to score 29 against Washington a couple of weeks ago. Is that their high score of the season? No, they had a 37.
No, 37 a couple times.
Yeah, against Carolina. But, I mean, this is the team that wants to run the ball, wants to play keep away from the 49ers. You know, the typical way that you try to play San Francisco. So it's very hard to see a big score in this game. So that's what I'm going with too. Something along those lines. I'll switch it up. And, you know, when these two teams get together, you sometimes have some oddball scores and scoring. I'll go 26-20 49ers. I do think that, the 49ers are going to be able to kind of break through that offensive line of Seattle's and really kind of make things miserable for Geno Smith in that crew. It's entirely possible that the Seahawks defense is able to do the same. So that's probably the Seahawks' best ticket to a win. They can be disruptive. If they can be disruptive up the middle, as you described, if Leonard Williams, who played well against the 49ers, in that Giants game earlier this year, despite the lopsided score. So I'm going to go 26-20 49ers. I guess the big question, David, is if it is a 49ers win, who gets tapped to be the guy or guys chomping on the turkey leg at midfield of Lumen Field, which of course would be comeuppance, recompense for what happened in Levi's Stadium way back when Jim Harbaugh was coach.
Yeah, this is the first time they're playing on Thanksgiving since 2014 against the Seahawks. Maybe the first time, period, the 49ers are playing on Thanksgiving since the Turkey on the 50 game against the Seahawks. So it is, for the franchise, it is a chance for vengeance. I know that you don't have many of the same people around. Players completely have turned over since 2014, but Jimmy Ward was around in 2014. He would have been a holdover. He was a rookie that season, but he's gone now. He's in Houston. So my bet for Turkey is, they're obviously going to bring out the quarterback if the 49ers win. So Brock Purdy would be eating turkey. And
he would be all polite. He'd eat it with a napkin and a fork and a knife. I want to see two guys who just kind of rip the legs off the car. You know, I want to see Chase Young and Nick Bosa doing
it. Yeah, Chase. Yeah, I think that it would be better TV if they got both Chase Young and Nick Bosa out there eating the turkey. If I remember correctly, it was Russell Wilson and Richard Sherman.
That's right.
They brought out an offensive and defensive player. So hopefully they're not stale like that. Hopefully they go with the turkey eating talent over just, you know, representing the offense and the defense.
Yeah, agreed.
Awesome. Well, everybody, thank you for joining. This is, we're going to be back much more frequently. We were both actually a little bit sick here over the past couple of weeks. So that's why we couldn't do a show this last week. But Matt and I are healthy and ready to go for the stretch run. It's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. So the 49ers at 7-3 taking on the Seahawks at 6-4. Thanksgiving night. This has been another episode of Here's the Catch. We'll talk to you all next time.